This podcast brought to you by Peterson Auto Group. With 5 stores and 10 brands and more than 1,800 new and used vehicles to choose from, Peterson Auto Group likely has your perfect car.
If you're talking about it,
they don't care about the view. They're not there for a discussion.
We're talking about it.
Let's take a deep breath and not get too carried away.
This is Idaho Talks Live with Paul J. Schneider and Chris Walton on News Talk 670 KVOI.
8:39 now at 670 KVOI. The whole thing's just falling apart. I don't know what's happening in here.
I'll tell you what's happening in here.
David Allen, Paul J.
The whole thing's falling apart.
Oh, okay. Well, good. Hey, I have an opinion piece here from USA Today today from Jamie, and it's D-I-M-O-N, so I don't know if it's Diamond or Dimon.
Dimon.
So I apologize for him if he's listening. I'm sorry, I don't know how to say your name. The United States is blessed with a combination of advantages that few other countries enjoy. We can all agree to that.
Yep.
We are the world's longest surviving democracy, go USA, with a entrepreneurial culture that fosters and rewards hard work and innovation. Also very true.
Mm-hmm.
Our natural resources are abundant. We have the world's strongest military and a generally reliable rule of law and low corruption. Those could be bandied about if you wanted to a little bit, but all in all, I think I agree with it. Our country has some of the best universities and hospitals and is home to many of the best, most vibrant businesses on the planet, from small and mid-sized companies to the large global multinationals.
True.
While we have been gifted with some of these benefits and earned others through hard work and determination, we know that American exceptionalism requires vigilance. Specifically, it means transcending our differences and seizing on opportunities to further the remarkable success story of our country to provide greater prosperity for all Americans. Also very true.
And something we've gotten away from.
Yes, you can't just be focused on 2017. You have to look to 2030.
Yep.
And make sure that everything's just chugging along. On Wednesday, President Trump will be, which is today, will be in Missouri to speak about the opportunity to do just that by finally passing comprehensive pro-growth tax reform. After traveling to Europe, Asia, the Middle East, and Latin America this year, I saw, it's again his opinion piece, I saw governments that understood the importance of practical policies to promote businesses and economic growth because they benefit their people through greater job creation and wage growth. This month, I traveled through several states in the Midwest, and I saw a different story where businesses are being held back by an uncompetitive tax code. Foreign governments have figured out that sensible pro-growth policies have the power to create opportunity at all levels of the economy. As a country, we seem to have lost our way. As a businessman and a proud American, this frustrates and upsets me. Reforming the tax code is the single most important thing that Congress could do to jumpstart our economy, create jobs, and raise wages for American workers. Our current code is uncompetitive, overly complex, and loaded with special interest provisions that unfairly create winners and losers. This drives down capital investment, reduces productivity, and causes wages to remain stagnant. Individuals and businesses continue to waste billions of dollars and millions of hours each year trying to figure out their tax bills. Simply amazing.
It is.
Simply amazing.
What, since 1955?
Yes.
It's gone up like 50 times?
Something like that. It's
unbelievable.
You don't know from 1 year to the next what's going to happen.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Instead of spending more time with their families or thinking about ways to innovate and expand.
Yep.
Our corporate tax rate is the highest in the developed world. It has led to more American businesses being acquired by foreigners or struggling to keep pace with their foreign competitors. This means headquarter jobs are going to overseas cities instead of American cities. Our uncompetitive system has trapped more than $2.5 trillion overseas because American companies are penalized for bringing profits back by our high U.S. corporate tax rate, boosting other countries at the expense of our own. Does that make sense to anybody? Anybody? This isn't about...
It doesn't make sense, but it's,
yeah,
it is.
That's the way it is, exactly. This isn't about helping companies like J.P. Morgan Chase. Yes, tax reform will help American companies become more competitive. But the real reason to do it is to increase jobs and increase wages. It's not about the corporation.
Mm-hmm.
As weird as it sounds, if you give the corporation the tax break and the tax cut, that trickles... I know trickle-down economics didn't run pretty well, but that will actually trickle down to mm-hmm. them hiring more people and being more innovative and raising wages. But if they have to look at that tax rate and go, well, we can't raise wages this year because of X, Y, and Z tax, and we're being penalized with this. It doesn't make any sense to me. I don't know why it's not simplified, and I've only been
and
alive.
You shouldn't be penalized to run a business in this country if you're a native.
Exactly. Exactly.
No, you shouldn't be.
Under our current corporate tax system, workers bear up to 75% of the corporate tax burden through lower wages. I believe that tax reform should go further than that to boost wages. It should also be used to do more for lower and middle income workers by expanding programs such as the Earned Income Tax Credit, which already lifts more than 7.3 million workers out of poverty. Policymakers have a once-in-a-lifetime chance to fix the tax code, and there are real consequences for failure. A recent survey of Business Roundtable CEOs found 90% believe that any delay in tax reform would harm the economy by causing slower growth, hiring, and investment. 90%.
It's big. It's huge.
The other side of the coin is that 76% of CEOs would increase hiring if Congress was successful in passing tax reform. How do you not love those two things? I don't get it.
And the thing is, we won't get together and do it.
No.
We won't do it.
Got to take a break here for traffic. 8:45 now at 670 KBOI.
This is Idaho Talks Live with Paul J. and Chris. More local talk with Nate Shellman is live this afternoon at 3 on 670 KBOI.
8:51 now at 670 KBOI. David Allen, Paul J. Schneider with you. Just two little paragraphs here to wrap this up. A utopian vision of tax reform will not fall from the heavens. Tax reform isn't easy. And there's a reason it's been more than 30 years since it has happened. The time has come for companies and Congress to set parochial and partisan interests aside to find a way to enact reform. If a reform proposal will result in greater economic growth, more jobs, higher wages, and allow American businesses to be competitive internationally, it should be supported. I'm as optimistic as ever on the future of America. It is encouraging that leaders in the White House, Senate, and House have reached a common vision for moving forward with reform. I hope that vision becomes something that elected officials from both parties can support. But it is critical that we see progress now. We have a limited window to get reform done, and this is an opportunity America can't afford to miss. Just to let you know, Jamie Dimon, or Dimon, is the CEO and chairman of J.P. Morgan Chase and the chairman of the Business Roundtable. So he's speaking from a CEO standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, we all agree, at the end of the day, it will help J.P. Morgan Chase. Tax reform helps big companies.
Yep.
But it also helps mid-sized companies, and it also helps small companies, and it also helps
Mom and Dad
and you and me.
Yep.
And for the country to play games and do a Republican Democrat thing or to do
I'm so tired.
It's just exhausting.
Why isn't everybody so tired of the damn game plan that everybody does? With everything that's brought up in Congress, everything that's brought up in business, everything that's brought up, first of all, you got to look for, I don't know what.
Well,
it's very discouraging.
And here's the thing. If you want to disagree on what we should do with North Korea.
Sure.
That's fine.
Yep.
You can disagree on that. You can play Republican, Democrat, liberal, conservative, however you want to look at it. You can disagree on that. But things that help propel America forward, everybody should be on board for that. If they do, in fact, propel America forward. I'm not saying don't go blindly into something.
Yeah.
But if you do the research and it shows that tax reform is going to help innovation in this country, and it's going to help
turn the economy around a little bit.
And make it a juggernaut, how can anybody not be for that? To where it literally does help from the top to the bottom.
You know, and we talked about this off the air. Houston, Melania Trump.
Yes.
And I told Chris this would happen. I said, she will go down to Houston and she will wear high heel shoes.
And when she left D.C., she was in heels yesterday. Yes.
Yeah, and I said, and that is what the media will focus on instead of the fact that a president and the first lady are down there trying to do something. They will get on her feet.
Yep.
And they did.
And they did.
And they did.
Rather than just going, you know what? The president and first lady went down to lift spirits. Mm-hmm. And they were smart not to go to Houston.
Yes.
Because that would have been a travesty to try to go down into Houston. So they just went to Corpus Christi and Austin.
Yep.
And rather than going, you know what?
There's nothing they can do right now.
No. And they're going to go back again Saturday. And she'll probably wear heels as she leaves D.C. And she'll change into tennis shoes when she gets to Texas. And all anybody could talk about for about 4 hours yesterday was her inappropriate footwear. And I thought to myself, with all the crap that's going on in this country, that's what's important. And it's just baffling to me.
It's stupid.
And the pettiness of both sides, the pettiness of both sides that we focus on that makes the economy and all those things become stagnant is just incredibly frustrating and so needless. It's needless.
Well, focusing on that.
Yeah.
Really?
But even focusing on the fact that, well, I'm a Democrat, so I have to be for the little guy. Well, tax breaks are for the little guy, so be for the tax breaks. Yes, again, the big corporation's also going to get the tax break, but so's the little guy, and it's gonna help because wages are going to go up, and it's going to be better. I don't know.
Let's go to line one.
Butch and Jerome, you're on 670 Butch. KBOI.
Yeah, good morning, gentlemen.
Hello.
Thanks for taking my call. You know, I'm listening to this, and it's just sickening me. You got people down there suffering in ways they've never suffered before, ever. And we're going to worry about the shoes that the first lady's wearing. You know, I got a pair of tennis shoes at home I wear all the time. My wife hates them, and we'd be happy to donate them to her. She can wear them.
She had beautiful tennis shoes on yesterday when she got to Texas.
Well, I didn't see it. All I've heard is this spew from all these people complaining about it. You know, you got people down there suffering, like I said, like they never have before. Let's help them. You know, you got the Democrats. They're saying, well, we can't build the wall because of this. We can't afford this. We can't afford that. Let's just stop foreign aid for 24 hours. We'll have so damn much money laying around. We'll hope another storm comes in. Let's stop this crap. We got to take care of Americans. We got to take care of us. A guy called into Nate's show last night. He was almost on the verge of tears. His son's down there been stuck in an apartment for 4 days. That's somebody from Boise. Everybody you see on TV has a mother, a father, a sister, a brother, a son, a daughter.
Thanks for the call, Butch.
We're out of time.
He's right.
Thanks, Butch. He is right.
And that passion needs to show all the way up to D.C. and all the leaders in Washington.
Yeah. No question.
If you're talking about it...
They don't care about the view. They're not there for a discussion.
We're talking about it.
Let's take a deep breath and not get too carried away.
This is Idaho Talks Live with Paul J. Schneider and Chris Walton on News Talk 670 KBOI.
Stall for a minute. I forgot to do this before
okay.
The show started.
Here's David Allen.
Okay, that wasn't really stalling that much. That was an awful stall. Okay, this story happened yesterday here in town. This is from the Statesman. I'm reading it right now. Two people were injured, one critically, after a pickup truck collided with a school bus yesterday afternoon in South Boise, according to Boise police.
Not a little pickup truck.
No, full-size pickup
truck.
Yeah, it was one of those big dogs. The driver of the pickup and a passenger were the two people hospitalized after the crash. None of the 45 children on the bus appeared to be seriously injured. Victory Road was temporarily shut down between Maple Grove and Cole Roads to allow police to do crash reconstruction. The crash was reported about 1:30 in the afternoon at West Victory Road and South...
Did you see the video?
Trabuco. Yes, I did. South Trabuco Avenue. The bus was transporting students from Bora High School to the Dennis Technical Education Center on Victory Road. So it's obviously bad for the people who were in the truck that collided with that because they're injured, one critically. So all prayers to them, and I hope they get better.
The entire front end of the truck,
the cab,
et cetera, was just ripped to shreds.
It almost looks like it's smooshed all the way back to almost the bed of the truck, if you look at this picture.
It's like a chewing gum wrapper.
Yeah. And I hope they get better, and I hope they get well, and that their injuries aren't too severe and they get better.
Mm-hmm.
While I'm glad that none of the 45 students were hurt on the bus, that's also really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
why in 2017 isn't every school bus fitted with seat belts? And I don't want anyone to call and say, well, it's going to cost millions of dollars. I understand that. I understand it's going to cost millions of dollars. How much is a kid's life worth?
I have a simple answer, and it's going to tick you off.
Oh, no. You're pulling a Nate right now on me. You're going to purposely tick me off. Go.
Simple answer.
Okay.
To the question of why don't school buses have seatbelts?
Okay.
They don't need them. In a cost-benefit analysis, the cost of adding seatbelts to school buses outweighs any potential benefits, according to the NHTSA studies. Modern school buses are large, they're heavy, the passengers sit high off the ground, and are remarkably safe.
And yet, I've seen crash reconstructions that they do where they show a bus tipping over and kids just flying through the bus. You know, they don't have kids. They have mannequins there. They're not
kids.
Those
are old, though, aren't they?
No. Huh? No, recent. Recent of a kid, of a bus,
I know the ones
like rolling
referring.
Down. And you see the mannequins just flying all over the place. And I know that within the last 10 years, there's been at least one instance where a bus has hit a train or something and a child's died. And I think to myself, I understand it costs millions of dollars. I get it. I'm not saying it's free, and I'm not saying it's not going to be costly. I guess at the end of the day, my question becomes, how much is a child's life worth?
School buses were designed to be the safest mode of transport for kids, but at least 18 states are considering mandatory seatbelt laws.
See, there you go.
But they... At this point in time, of all the vehicles out there, they are the safest.
You know, that's like saying that planes are the safest form of transportation until one crashes and 350 people die.
Yeah.
Then it's not quite. Since 1998, there have been about 414,300, and this is from 2008 data. So this is in a 10-year. Since 1998, there have been about 414,399 fatal motor vehicle traffic crashes. Of those, 1,409 were classified as school transportation related.
Okay.
Since 1998, and again, this is from 1998 to 2008. That's the latest I have from my Google. 1,564 people have died in school transportation related crashes, an average of 142 fatalities per year. Does that seem like the safest form of transportation to you when your children are involved? Because here's the thing. If you're driving your car and you're driving it on the freeway and you're doing 85 miles an hour and you're texting and driving and or you're eating a sandwich or you've got a dog on your lap or whatever and you crash, that's on you. That's your fault because you're being unsafe.
True.
If a little kid... Or a high school kid, I'm saying little because I'm 55, and so a 17-year-old is going to be a little kid to me. If he's sitting on a bus, and the bus driver's inattentive and crashes and he dies, that's not the kid's fault. So 142 fatalities per year. Most of the people who lost their lives in these crashes, 72% were occupants of other vehicles involved, but non-occupants accounted for 20%, and occupants of school transportation vehicles around 8%. So 8% is a small number, unless it's your son or daughter. Then you're going to be okay with those numbers? You're just going to go, well, I'm just part of the 8%. It's all good. We don't need to worry about seatbelts. Maybe I'm wrong. And if I'm wrong, call. I'm not going to be ranting about it. If somebody thinks I'm wrong, call and tell me I'm wrong. And it's a ridiculous thing to think about seatbelts on a bus. But if I was a parent and my son or daughter died on a school bus accident, I wouldn't go, well, just chalk it up to the 8%. I can make another one, I guess.
Collateral damage.
Yeah. And maybe it's not a topic. Maybe it's something nobody cares about.
No, people care
but
about it.
I just think if you can save one child by having them in a seatbelt, isn't that better than 8% of kids dying on school buses? I don't know. I don't know. It seems to me to be a smart thing to do. 208-336-3700, 1-800-529-5264, #670 on your Verizon Wireless. We got a couple people holding on. We will take more of your calls. It's 914 at 670 KBOI.
This is Idaho Talks Live. Today at 3, listen to Nate on 670 KBOI.
919 now at 670 KBOI. KBOI rewards code SEATBELT. 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 Go to KBOI.com, enter the keyword seatbelt, get your 5,000 rewards points, and your life will be much happier.
It will be.
I have two instant messages. HG and McCall says, I'm old. Didn't wear seatbelts for decades. Nor did I. As a kid.
Nor did I.
As a kid, you just ran around the car.
Well, I didn't have them. But
exactly. But I do now, and it's safer to do so. I think school buses should have seatbelts. And then the other instant message I have here is from Bob, who says, I asked this question years ago, around the time they made it mandatory for everybody to have seatbelts. I asked it then and said at the time, I will wear my seatbelt after all the school buses have seatbelts. Why can't the school buses have seatbelts and make them even safer than they already are? Out of all the kids that have died in a bus, how many would have survived if they had a seatbelt? I think it's ridiculous that there are no seatbelts on all buses. I would agree with you, Bob, in Boise. It seems ridiculous to me also. Because, and like I say, it's mandatory that you have to, you know, it's a law that you have to wear the seatbelt in your car.
Mm-hmm.
Why am I more important than an 8-year-old boy or girl? So,
what about Greyhound buses?
I'm going to be honest with you. In my life, I have never been on a Greyhound or a Trailways bus.
Yeah, but it's not all about you.
No, I'm saying I don't know if they have seatbelts or not. That's my
point.
No,
they don't.
They don't? Okay. That was my point.
No.
I've never been on one of those. But they should also have them. Because there are more of those bus accidents than there are school bus accidents, probably. So, yes, Greyhounds and Trailways and all those charter buses, they should all have seatbelts. Anything that is going 70 miles an hour on the freeway should have a seatbelt. Yes.
Motorhomes.
Yes. Your motorhome should have a seatbelt.
It does. My motorhome does have seatbelts.
And if you have a situation where, let's say you're sitting in the back and you want to walk up front, it's like being in a plane. You take your chances when you unbuckle the seatbelt and walk up to the front. You know, if I have to go pee on a plane, I know that as I unbuckle my seatbelt, and if I'm walking back to the bathroom, if we hit turbulence, I'm up on the top of the ceiling. But I understand that.
Yeah.
But I will. I think you do it. You fly. You've flown more than I have in my life. I never take my seatbelt off. It's the first thing I put on is when I sit down. When we're on the tarmac, and then I literally don't take it off till the bus is at the bus, till the plane is at the gate. I just don't.
All right. Let's go to Brad of Eagle on line one. Brad, good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. I believe that the reason that we don't have seatbelts on school buses has to do with evacuation procedures. You're dealing with school-age children going from kindergartners on up. Picture the scene. You've got a bus that's been involved in an accident. A fire has started, and you're trying to get a 5-year-old to unbuckle that seatbelt.
I think that made...
And while I'm not going to disagree with you, Brad,
to an extent,
but let's say you have a bus accident and the bus catches on fire and there are no seatbelts and the kids are scattered all through the bus.
Still easier to gather them and get them moving without the seatbelts on.
We're just going to disagree, Brad. I see your point, honestly, and I think it's a valid point. But I think if you've got bodies scattered all over the bus because they've been bouncing around in there, and they're underneath one of the seats, and he might be unconscious. Whereas if you said, all right, there's 25 rows, 2 kids a row, I know how many kids I got to get out of here. As opposed to, there's so much smoke, I've got to look under every seat, I've got to try to find every kid in here. I do this, Brad, you've listened enough to the show. I always go to the extreme. I always turn everything up to 11. So I make everything the worst tragedy ever. But I want to be aware of those things. I don't know.
You do understand seatbelts jam.
Yes. Oh, certainly I do.
And as I said, you're dealing with 5-year-old children. You're going to have a percentage of those seats occupied by 5-year-old children. So you can just write the 5 and 6-year-olds off.
Okay, but your seatbelt can jam. How come you have to wear a seatbelt?
It's something where I'm more likely to be capable of dealing with that jammed seatbelt than that 5-year-old. Because I'm more coordinated. Thank you.
I don't know that I am.
Plus the fact that the seats in a school bus are padded to where they are far safer than the seat in your, 78 Sunbird.
Why you got to make fun of my car? Thanks for calling in, Brad. I appreciate it, brother. Thanks.
You're welcome.
He's got a valid point. And like I say, when I was talking about it.
I think his point is one of the reasons there aren't seatbelts.
Like I say, I've been here 6 years. Everybody knows I go crazy sometimes. But I just think that every time a kid dies in a situation where they shouldn't, whether it be in a ditch, at a swimming pool, in a school bus, whatever the situation might be, I think society as a whole loses a little bit of humanity. Because our job as adults is to protect children, all children, whether they're yours or not. And I think we lose a little bit whenever a child dies. And I have no children. I've never had children. I've had nieces and nephews. But the saddest thing to me is when a child dies. It's just sad.
Would you agree that you can't make every place safe?
Yes, I will 100% agree.
There's
that
a
you
line
can't,
somewhere
you
that
can't
has
wrap
to be
kids
drawn
in bubble wrap. I get that.
Yeah.
But I think a moving vehicle that sometimes is on the freeway doing 65 miles an hour, we can maybe put bubble wrap on that.
Interesting. And obviously we're not going to solve.
No.
Because people have been trying to solve it for years.
Yeah, I just wanted to have a conversation about it. So.
Yeah.
9:26, news with Jay Howell is next on 670 KBOI.
This is Idaho Talks Live. Today at 10, listen to Rush on 670 KBOI.
9:36 now at 670 KBOI. David and Paul Jay here with you. 208-336-3700, 1-800-529-5264. We are discussing seatbelts on buses.
Seatbelts on buses. Let's go to John of Meridian. John, you're on 670 KBOI. Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, I think I was responding to Gary. Is that his name?
Yes.
Yeah. He presupposed a bunch of stuff with his little scenario. He's trying to go through this logical steps, but he missed the other dynamic. If you got a bus full of kids and there's a fire, that's all he said. He didn't say it was rolled over, did he?
No,
he did not.
Well, if there's a fire, we got to get all the buses off. There's the buddy system. Help your friend get out, and let's all get off the bus. But take the same scenario, and then now the bus is turned over. If there's no seatbelts, there's going to be some bumped heads. I heard one story where a bunch of high school kids fell on a first or second grader and killed him.
Wow.
No one else got hurt, just the first grader, because all the bodies tumbled together.
Sure.
Well, seatbelts would have solved that problem. But my whole contention is there shouldn't be school buses in the first place. Why don't we just take all the money wasted by the state on transportation and give it to the parents who are trying to get their kids to school and supplement their travel time that way? I know you're going to say, oh, look at the traffic, but how is that less? The bus traffic is more nobler somehow than car traffic.
You know what? I'm not going to say that. I'm going to say that's a very interesting idea, and I had never thought of it.
A lot of it... And I'm not saying it's a bad idea, but a lot of it would be that time of day for the parents, would be parents having kids, like
some of it is a
7 or 8 years apart.
Yeah.
And some go to this school and some go to that school.
And some of it's a distance thing, too, if you have to drive, if the bus can pick everybody up and take them to one rather than.
It is being supplemented, though, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, no. I understand
that. I hear that.
Okay.
I just never thought of it.
I'm not poo-pooing it.
I got to go.
All right, thanks. Have a great day. Thanks. I'm not poo-pooing it either. I'd never thought of it before.
Hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah. Let's go to Rich of Boise. Rich, you're on 670 KBOI.
Well, one, on that theory, it would cost 50 times more to have people driving their kids to school and have them going in a bus.
Well, I think if you have four or five kids, you know, and one in high school, one in junior high.
Yeah, even per child, it would cost way, way more. Bus transportation is cheap.
Okay.
But why not put them in MRAPs? You know, those armored vehicles that the back folds down, they hold about 15 people. Then I guarantee you they'd be safe. Semi could hit one of those.
I'm not going to acknowledge that with any kind of a reaction.
Well, there is a cost-benefit analysis, and the people who figure this out, they work on that. We want to save the lives of people, lower the speed limit. We don't want to do that. That saves lives. So there is a cost-benefit analysis to how much we're willing to spend.
But just lowering the speed limit doesn't do anything, because the speed limit now is 65 and people still do 80. So if you lower the speed limit to 30, people are going to do 50. And if you want to make it so vehicles can't go more than 30 miles an hour, then that makes sense.
When they lowered the speed limit to 55, it cut automobile deaths. I mean, the stats, everything proved that. You're wrong, David. Lowering the speed limit does
no,
save lives.
You know what? And you know what, Rich? At 55, I still did 70, dude. I still did 70.
I can prove it. I can prove it.
No, no. What I'm telling you is, Rich,
I can prove
Rich,
it. I can...
Rich, I'm just saying, when it was 55, I did 70. When it was 70, I did 80. So I'm telling you I'm telling you from my perspective, it doesn't solve anything just lowering the speed limit.
From your perspective, except that it does solve lives. From your perspective, it doesn't, except it does. Right. And I can prove it.
All right. Thanks for the call, Rich. We appreciate it. He's so ridiculous. Why don't we put him in MRAPs? That's the most asinine thing I've ever heard him say. And he said a lot of asinine things in six years.
I thought it was pretty good, man.
It's
MRAPs?
Ridiculous.
Huh?
It's ridiculous.
Who would like it more than anything?
The kids.
Oh, God.
They would love to be in MRAPs. Heidi in Cuna said, my husband was a bus driver for a few years, and we've discussed seatbelts in the bus many times. I don't know if you've been on a bus recently, but they are so overcrowded. If you get three larger kids in one seat, one kid is always hanging off the seat. Seats are just not big enough to be seatbelt everyone in. Well, then don't have overcrowded buses. That seems to be an issue, too, whether there are seatbelts on them or not.
It comes down to money, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, if there's supposed to only be 70 kids on the bus, and I'm just throwing out a number, if there's only supposed to be 70 kids on the bus, don't put 74 kids on the bus.
To save money.
If the buses are overcrowded, stop overcrowding buses. And that seems like a simple thing, but maybe not. Dave in Boise says, why can't they have a seatbelt drill just like a fire drill? To answer Brad's comment, it's not that much different than a fire.
I wonder if they do.
I don't know.
I think they might.
I know they always have fire drills. I always had fire drills as a kid.
Yeah.
And so maybe they would just do seatbelt drills. I don't know.
Let's go to Doug of Meridian. Doug.
Hi. I don't know where that Rich gets all his information from, but it's obviously not from the public knowledge. I was calling about the seatbelts. Why don't they make a design it so that, you know how cats have these knockoff collars? If they catch onto the fence or something,
yeah,
make a quick release kind of seatbelts that if there is an accident, they can all pop out of it real quick.
It's not a bad idea.
Yeah.
Technology. Use a little technology.
Yeah.
So.
And we had another guy call in saying that there's a tool that you can use that cuts through the seatbelt easily, and most rescue people have those. So that if they were belted in and the seat was upside down, you just cut through all the seat belts also and release the kids.
You're not giving that to kids, though, right?
No. The rescue people would have it. No, I'm not giving that to a 5-year old. No.
It'd be one of those tools in every row of the seats.
Or just have it for the bus driver who's there.
Have it
for the adult. Thanks for the call. Art in Boise writes in and says, I'm a retired fire captain. It is because of rescue operations. It would make our rescue operations much more difficult. He says it's not a money issue at all. He's a retired fire captain. I'm not. So I'm going to go with him. I'll go with what Art says.
So he is saying basically we don't have seat belts because it would hamper rescue.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I kind of think that might be right.
And again, not having any children, not ever being in a school bus accident as a kid, I don't know. And I'm not an emergency, you know, services person, so they could be right. I just brought up the idea, and I wanted to go somewhere other than MRAPs.
KBOI News Time 944. We'll be back with more of your phone calls.
Remember, you are listening to Idaho Talks Live on 670 KBOI.
949 now at 670 KBOI. Talking seatbelts on buses and whether kids should be put in MRAPs or not.
Let's go to Charlie in Boise. Charlie, good morning.
Good morning, Paul J. How are you doing on this fine day?
Excellent.
Well, I would like to say that I think the NTSB should mandate that all buses, including the coach buses, have seatbelts on the buses, because if we have to wear one in our vehicles, then so should the passengers on a bus.
You know, it's funny that you bring that up, because I agree with you 100%. Thank you for the call. I also have the same problem with, because you drove a motorcycle for a lot of years. I drove a motorcycle for a lot of years. It always bothered me that I had to wear a seatbelt, but I didn't have to wear a helmet. There's no helmet law in New Mexico or Texas where I lived. But there were seatbelt laws. Okay, but there were seatbelt laws. It's like, well, I have to be safe in my car, but I don't have to be safe on my two-wheel vehicles that basically emergency,
are more dangerous.
Emergency personnel will tell you that they're donor mobiles because you're basically, in most accidents, going to give up most of your organs.
Yeah. All right. Good stuff. Thanks, Charlie. Let's go to Billy of Fruitland. Billy, good morning.
Good morning, Paul J. Good morning, David.
Hello, sir.
I've just started listening to you. I've gone headed into Boise right now. But the only thing that amazes me is that someone doesn't come up with a very simple solution. And my suggestion is, do you remember I'm 64, but do you remember as children you get on a carnival ride and that bar comes down and holds you in the seat? You know, if there's one kid in the seat or if there's three, you know, I want them to be safe, of course. But it's a pretty simple, I think, solution to it. Even with proper training, there would be an emergency release, and you could indicate to children in the training session that if they're upside down, the one person on the inside or the one person on the outside would release the bar, which then in itself upside down in an inverted position would retain them from falling on their head. They could hang on to it, in a sense, to get to the ceiling of the bus. And in an event of a fire, there would be an emergency release that the bus driver would have that would release all of those bars, you know, that would lift them so that they could all get out. You know, because kids are, you tell a kid, look, I remember, you know, you tell a kid to do something, he's not going to do it 90% of the time.
That's that right.
You know, like, go put your seatbelt on. Well, yeah, right.
Sure, I'll get to it.
You know what I mean? They sit down in the seat, the bar comes down. I know there's going to be minor engineering, which I don't think would be that difficult in this day and age. And a sensor. Look, remember the sensors in the seats? I remember my old Chevelle SS had a sensor. You sit down on the seat, tells you to put your seatbelt on. It doesn't put it on for you.
I remember those, too.
Yeah, the light comes on the dash. That's a seatbelt. Well, guess what? I took the bulb out of it.
That's American ingenuity right there.
I didn't want to look at the light all night long.
Exactly.
Okay.
Thanks for the call.
I always enjoy your program. Thank you.
Thanks. We appreciate you listening. Bob in Meridian writes in and says, oh, how I love to prove Rich wrong. And this is Bob saying this, not me. I didn't send this. Research shows lives were actually saved by increasing the speed limit from 55 to 65. Quote, taken as a whole, these different analyses lead to the conclusion that overall statewide fatality rates fell by 3.4% to 5.1% in the states that adopted the 65-mile-an-hour limit from the former 55. Why did the new speed limit lower the fatality rate? One, drivers may have switched to safer roads. Two, highway patrols may have shifted resources to activities with more safety payoff. And three, the speed variance among cars may have declined. It might decline on the interstates as law-abiding drivers caught up with the speeders, and it might have declined on other highways as their speeders switched to the interstates. The evidence indicates that events 1 and 2 did occur. We have no evidence for event 3. Future research ought to be directed toward disentangling the relative contribution of these factors.
Nice.
That was Bob in Meridian, not me.
Let's go to Mark in Caldwell. Mark.
Yeah, good morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
We probably ought to stop talking about the 65-mile-an-hour speed limit. Primarily because it is a good speed limit, but nobody does 65.
Exactly.
Let's talk about 80. You know, David Allen, you said so yourself. If the speed limit is 50, you're doing 70.
Yep.
I think the simplest solution is people need to start taking more responsibility in the way they drive. People roll through stop signs. People run red lights. Mm-hmm. Everybody's in a bigger hurry than the other. You know, these crashes happen because people don't like following or don't respect the rules of the road.
And you know what? Even though I'm guilty of it, I will 100% agree with you. And I didn't flaunt it or anything, but I didn't want to drive 70 or 65. I wanted to drive 80, so I drove 80. And
everybody else feels the same way.
Exactly, exactly. And that's what it leads to is complete anarchy. Thanks for the call. We appreciate it.
Thanks.
And he's right, because there's an all-way stop that I run by all the time over in my area.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody ever stops. It's a yield. I take my life in my hand running through there because I'm thinking, oh, I can just run through it because it's an all-way stop.
Yeah.
But no. People are rolling, man. They are rolling through there.
Yeah.
And that's not good.
No. There's one of those on my way home, too.
Yeah. And there always is.
Yep.
And they're always, and people, and he's right. And we should all, including me, we should all do a better job of being responsible as drivers and make sure that we're not just looking out for ourselves, which is half the battle.
True.
We're also looking out for everybody else who's on the road.
Yep.
Because then if everyone's looking out for everybody and we're all good, then accidents will naturally come down.
Can't we all just get along?
No. The answer is no.
No.
We can't.
The answer,
no, we
right.
can't. National news comes up next, followed by Jay Howell with a local angle. Rush Limbaugh after that. Michael Savage at 1 o'clock. Nate with a local angle at 3 o'clock. Keep it right here. Enjoy your Wednesday. Paul, Jay, and I will be back tomorrow morning on 670 KBOI.